1 to 14. Chapters. Yep, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And now we are doing Raghunuga Bhakti. Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. And in this chapter, Rupa Goswami first begins with a definition of Raghunuga. Alright, so, have you read the chapter? Student workbook with you today. Good, yeah. What's the definition then of what is the first definition there given of Raghunuga Bhakti? Probably should be in here. Yes. You'll notice there that this is a slight difference between what's stated in the Nectar Devotion and what we've got in our student text books. Srila Prabhupada is describing Raghunuga Bhakti in this chapter. The first definition, technically, is Gaudapika Bhakti. Which, it's actually describing the particular type of love, the particular type of bhakti, pure devotional service, which is there within the residence of Vrindavan. The Braja. Those who actually aspire or follow in their footsteps to attain that sort of love practice the Raghunuga Bhakti. Within the Chaitanya Charitamrita, love is vividly expressed and manifest by the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Devotional service that accords with their devotional service is called Raghunuga Bhakti, or devotional service following in the wake of spontaneous loving service. So there, you see that Srila Prabhupada has confirmed the technical translation of the difference between Raghunuga, or devotional service consisting of spontaneous love, compared with Raghunuga, which is devotional service following in the wake of spontaneous love. And then, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyamita, chapter 22, text number 150, again the word Raghunuga Kulita is used. Raghunuga Kulita, which means again, it says, when one becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, according to one's natural inclination to love him, and is fully absorbed in thoughts of the Lord, that state is called transcendental attachment, and devotional service according to that attachment is called ragatika, or spontaneous devotional service. So that's now the first one I quoted was quoting Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, verse number 270, and this one is quoting Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, verse number 272. So again, chapter 22, verse 152. Again, we see Prabhupada translates it. Thus, devotional service which consists of raga, or deep attachment, is called ragatmika, spontaneous loving service. If a devotee covers such a position, he is considered to be most fortunate. Spontaneous devotional service can be easily seen in Krishna's direct associates in Vrindavan. The spontaneous dealings of the residents of Vrindavan in relationship with Krishna are called Raganuga. So there he uses the word Raganuga, which we can understand technically. These beings don't have to learn anything about devotional service. They are already perfect, already with the principles, and have achieved the spontaneous loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For example, the cowherd boys who are playing with Krishna do not have to learn by austerities or penances or yogic practices how to play with him. They have passed all tests of regular principles in their previous lives, and as a result, they are now elevated to the position of direct association with Krishna as his dear friends. Their spontaneous attitude is called Raganuga Bhakti. Again, he uses the term Raganuga. Now, and then he says, Srila Rupa Goswami has defined Raganuga Bhakti as spontaneous attraction for something while completely absorbed in thoughts of it with an intense desire of love. Devotional service executed with such feelings of spontaneous love is called Raganuga Bhakti. Devotional service under the heading of Raganuga can be further divided into two categories. One category is called sensual attraction and the other is called relationship. So, in one sense, wherever Srila Prabhupada has used the term Raganuga, we can actually insert the term Ragatmika if we are referring to the residents of Vrindavan, the associates of the Lord, who are actually within their constitutional position in the association of Krishna. Prabhupada has used the term Raganuga. You notice that in his paragraph he's actually saying that they have passed all tests of regular principles in their previous lives, and as a result, they are now elevated to the position of direct association with Krishna as his dear friend. So, he's using the term Raganuga in the sense that he's talking about people who have the direct association with Krishna and the direct association of the Ragatmika Bhaktas, and in their association, they're being trained up to become Ragatmika Bhaktas themselves. See? So, he's actually using the term properly, in the sense, by referring to those who have come to that position, who are actually associating with Krishna and the Ragatmika Bhaktas, and they're following in the footsteps of those devotees. He's describing, in their previous life they've practiced regular principles, and they've come to this position of association. And we see that with sages have done that Karani Pais, who approached Lord Ram and prayed, for conjugal relationship, which Lord Ram gave them the benediction they would take birth as gopis. Now those personalities and many others such as that who were sadhana siddhas became perfect by practice of sadhana, vaidhi bhakti, raghunuga bhakti, and then elevated the position to be associated with Krishna and his raghatmika bhaktis. They're following the process then of raghunuga bhakti because they're learning, even in that association, to become raghatmika bhakti. So it's not that Srila Prabhupada has misunderstood, and used the wrong term. He's referring to raghunuga bhaktis. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see very clearly, if you understand the distinction. But here, because in the sense that the chapter deals with, we've just gone from teaching devotees about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and now in the mood that he's now teaching about Raghunuga Bhakti, it's the next level, and technically, to understand that, we also have to understand Raghunuga Bhakti, Srila Prabhupada, in his own wisdom, has decided not to confuse the issue in the technical terms. As he does, the Nectar Devotion is a summary, and it is written in very approachable language. I remember I read this before I ever met a devotee, and I could sort of follow what Srila Prabhupada was saying to some degree. You do notice that I've met many people that when they read the books, as soon as they come across one or two Sanskrit words or even a big English word that they don't understand, they lose interest in the book. We can't speak it before them. Srila Prabhupada's wisdom is just from using the term Raghunuga Bhakti, because that's the next thing we're learning about. He hasn't confused us with too many technicalities. And he's using the term appropriately in the sense of those who they have association with Krishna and his associates, they're still following Raghunuga Bhakti. Don't people understand? Questions or comments?
Yes. The reference to Prabhupada Sanskrit Gyan Guru.
Saying, for example, the cowherd boys who are playing with Krishna do not have to learn by a series of penances or yogic practice how to play with him. They have passed all tests of regulative principles in their previous lives. And as a result, they are now elevated to the position of direct association with Krishna as his dear friends. So,
I can't say term associates.
In this sense, he's not referring to them as eternal associates. He's not referring, he's not talking about all the categories. Here, there's a very famous verse in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam by Sukadeva Goswami, where he describes that as a result, he's seeing, he's referring to the cowherd boys, and he's saying how fortunate are they, how many pious activities they must have performed in their previous lives to have this opportunity. So therefore, in reference to that particular verse, which Srila Prabhupada quotes a lot, he is referring to those who have been elevated to the position of associating with Krishna in the form of cowherd boys. But they, those sadhana siddhas or kripa siddhas they also get the opportunity to associate with their intercessors, who have never had, they're eternally perfect and have never had to perform any sadhana or any process that associates of the Supreme Lord. They haven't had to accumulate any pious activities in their previous lives. Again, Srila Prabhupada is writing the nectar devotion in such a way as to encourage a general understanding at this point that one can actually be elevated from the platform of regular principles of devotional service to direct association with the Lord. That's a big jump. Later on, there is a discussion in the nectar devotion as the difference between the intercessors and sub-intercessors. It actually does come up, but in order not to divert us with, again, too many technicalities or too much information too soon, it's just left for a later day in the book. So that's cleared up a little later in the nectar devotion, but certainly we shouldn't assume from here that all the cowherd boys or all the associates have somehow had to be elevated by sadhana to that position somewhere. Okay? So Prabhupada states here in in the first couple of sentences, Prabhupada says the spontaneous dealings of the residents of Vrindavan in relationship with Krishna are called Raganuga. These beings don't have to learn anything about devotional service, they are already perfect in all regular principles and have achieved the spontaneous loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It says here, they have passed all tests of regular principles in their previous lives. As a result, they are now elevated. So, he's definitely talking about sadhana siddhis who have actually been elevated to that position, and he's just not bringing in the subject at all of the nitya siddhis, which is discussed later on.
Actually, we hear from different lectures that person, Mayavadi generally they go to the darkest regions of hell. But here it's mentioned that the people who are enemies of God, still they go to Brahma Jyoti. So this is something I'm able to understand, how to see that.
That's on page 121, is that correct?
Yes. What is the name of the body? Maybe it's a dead life. We are not allowed to enter, well, not the body, we don't have life, but it's interspiritual opinion. Brahma in the village.
See, here in this first paragraph of page 121, he says, impersonalists and the enemies of the Lord are, because of attraction to God, allowed to enter into his kingdom, but they are not allowed to enter into the Vaikuntha planets or below the Vrindavan. Here in the second paragraph, he says, Rupa Goswami is trying here to describe the different achievements of the impersonalists and the personalists. The general those impersonalists are inimical to the Supreme Lord. They get interest into the impersonal Brahma. When and if they reach spiritual perfection. The impersonalist philosophers are in one sense like the enemies of the Lord because they are out and out enemies of the Lord. And the impersonalists are both time, because the out and out enemies of the Lord and the impersonalists are both glad to enter into the impersonal intelligence of the Brahma Jyoti. And on the bottom, Prabhupada says that sometimes an impersonalist may gradually elevate himself to the personal conception of the Lord. Bhagavad Gita confirmed this: after many births and deaths, he is actually not as surrendered unto me. By such surrender, any persons can be elevated to Vaikuntha Loka. Now, Prabhupada says, I don't see that Srila Prabhupada has used the word Mayavadi at all in that paragraph. He's used the term impersonals. There's a difference between an impersonalist and a Mayavadi. The Mayavadis, they're openly sort of against the principle of there being a personality right here. You know, they decry, as Philip Prabhupada says, the person from the Lord. Impersonalists, you know, they're attracted to the impersonal feature of the Absolute. Their understanding of the personal feature of the Absolute Truth is not very well developed. But you know, there's a difference between those who are, you know, particularly envious and particularly disturbed by you know, the personal feature of the Lord, as a Mayavadi, they, you know, strongly preach against it. The personalists tend to be a little bit more neutral. They're just following a particular feature of the Lord that they're attracted to. The impersonal feature of the Lord, of course, the attraction there is one becomes God, one becomes one with God. You know, so people may be attracted to that. But they will worship you know, the personal form of the Lord as a stepping stone, and then discard that personal form of the Lord. But they're not, you know, particularly aggressive, or it just has no value according to their lack of understanding. The Mayavadis tend to be more openly antagonistic towards the personal feature of the Lord, become disturbed by that. In one sense, Prabhupada is using the word impersonalist and not Mayavadi. There is a slight difference between them. Their attitudes. In another sense, you know, so for instance, if one has an impersonalist philosophy, whether we call them impersonalist or Mayavadi, if they're executing the principles of the Vedas in order to achieve impersonal liberation, according to the degree of offences they commit against God on that path, will certainly as we know, every process that we follow according to the degree of bhakti that may be performed on that path to that degree of some success. The person will achieve oneness with the Lord, entrance into the realm of jyoti, or some, you know, even within this world, some form of liberation, according to the degree of his faith in Sankhya, please the Lord actually. But to the degree that they've actually been offensive to the Lord, particularly his devotees, their success then is not rewarded, and in fact they can sometimes be made to suffer as a result of being particularly offensive. So one can be an impersonalist without being particularly offensive to the Supreme Lord. But then there are other impersonalists who are actually quite offensive to the Lord and his devotees. And they may have to suffer some reaction. And they forego the results of, you know, what they're trying to get. Now, there are two types of Raghunuga Bhakti. What's that?
Kamarupa.
Yeah.
And then you call the other one?
Kamarupa, what do you call the other one?
Samanyarupa.
Yeah.
Samanyarupa is relationship.
Yeah, read it out. Kamarupa is?
Kamarupa is sensual attraction, like gopis. Samadhirupa is relationship with Mother and Yashoda, Anwar and Uddhava.
So, we can understand, of course, that Srila Rupa Goswami has given Kama Rupa its own unique category because it's so preeminent amongst all types of, you know, spontaneous pure devotional service. And the others, the group together. Now, very famous verse here, which is commented a lot on this particular point because it describes this Raghunuga Bhakti, Raghunuga Bhakti. And that is from the 7th canto, 1st chapter, verse 30 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Describes here, there are many devotees who first become attracted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the purposes of sense gratification. From being envious of him, so the first one of course is lust, next one is envy, out of fear of him, or from desiring to associate affectionately with him. Under these attractions, ultimately these attractions become free from all material contamination, and gradually the worshipper develops spiritual love and achieves that ultimate goal of life desired by the pure devotee. Rupa Goswami, quoting this verse, to substantiate that there are two types of Raghunuga Bhakti. But the main point of Narada Muni's, Narada Muni's making one statement here as a main point that somehow or another one should fix one's mind upon Krishna. In that regard, he's given certain examples of personalities like the Kamsa and Sushupati. Some of those examples are therefore expressing that point to its extreme degree, but not necessarily giving a description of examples of Raghunuga Bhakti. Who would not be Raghatmika Bhakti there? Gopis?
Kamsa.
Kamsa. That's right. Kamsa?
Shishupa.
And Shishupal, because there is fear and envy. Why is that not considered Bhakti?
Attention is wrong.
What's that?
Attention is wrong. Respect.
Unfavorable. Right, because that was one of the original definitions of pure devotion. So it must be favorable. So therefore, we can't include that. Another interesting point, following up what you were saying, we see in the Bhagavatam that King Raina also hated God, but unlike Kamsa and Sisipal, his mind was not absorbed in God, so he just went to hell. Raina. But he also hated God, in the same way that comes from Sisipal, that his mind was not absorbed in God. So this is the point Narada Muni is making, that if somehow or another our mind is absorbed in God, it will have some purification effect and give some benefit, like liberation. It's not, so we have to be careful not to think, oh, you can hate God and get liberation. For those who hate God, but their minds are not ever thinking about him, just go to hell. You know, or if they're, Prabhupada, if we look at Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 1, text number 32, says that somehow or another one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously, then by one of the five different processes mentioned above, which is, so this is the next verse, one can return home back to Godhead. Atheists like King Vaina, however, being unable to think of Krishna's form in any of these five ways, cannot attain salvation. Therefore one must somehow think of Krishna, whether in a friendly way or in an inimical way. So it's actually described in the next verse of the Bhagavatam. In the third part of that, Srila Prabhupada says, impersonal and atheists always try to circumvent the form of the Lord. Great politicians and philosophers of the modern age even try to banish Krishna from Bhagavad Gita. Consequently, for them there is no salvation. If Krishna's enemies think, here is Krishna my enemy, I have to kill him. They think of Krishna in his actual form, and thus they attain salvation. Devotees therefore who constantly think of Krishna's form are certainly liberated. Here he says, the only business of a Mayavadi atheist is to make Krishna formless, and consequently, because of this severe offence of the lotus feet of Krishna, they cannot expect salvation. So that answers your question. Except for Sisipal, those who go against the regulative principles cannot attain salvation and are surely destined for a hellish life. The regulative principle is that one must always think of Krishna, whether as a friend or an enemy. The Mayavadis go out of their way to banish the form of Krishna and to make sure no one thinks of it. By not thinking of the form of Krishna, by rejecting it from their mind, from their heart, they become, they cannot expect salvation. You see, there's a difference. That's the difference between the Mayavadis and the impersonals. They may, as I said, sometimes they incorporate, worship of Krishna, the form of Vishnu and Narayana. But then they worship. They may be thinking that ultimately they may discover that they do, for some time, hesitate. There's an element there of that purifies their mind to some degree and gives them some results on the path that they're trying to attain. Whereas those who completely reject or not think of the form of the Lord and try to convince others to follow that same path is particularly offensive, and therefore they're not getting the benefit of what the Bible is speaking about. You'll see that throughout the Vedic literatures, across the Srimad Bhagavatam, and books that describe particularly results of association with the Lord, either favourably or unfavourably, if you look at everything very, very carefully, there's a particular destination for the exact mentality. So, for every little increment of favourable Krishna consciousness, there's a little increment in their destination. It's very exact. There's no contradiction anywhere. There's a particular reason. So some statements, like you said, you may read somewhere that the person is for salvation, and someone else says, oh, they go to hell for a particular reason for it. That statement's correct for a particular reason. It's just understanding that reason. But generally you find that the principle behind all of it is that for each little increment, and you see that in the Brihad Bhagavatam read by Sanatana Goswami. Goes very, very, very carefully. He actually analyzes all the different demons that Krishna come across in Vrindavan, and their relatives, and friends, and he describes the different destinations they attain and why there was differences. And he points out that because there was this slight difference in the mentality, which was just a little extra favorable than the other demon, so he got this. And he goes through all of them. In some cases you see, according to the different favourable result, therefore Krishna sometimes killed the demon and then performed funeral rites for the family. So some different extra benefits of that, because it was just that little extra favourable mentality, so they got some extra benefits. There's one purport there. Alright. It goes for many pages, a big long purport to describe it in very late fiction. This verse by Rupa Goswami, of course, is describing six different moods. We've got the lusty desire of the gopis, that's called Vihara Mahat. There's fear, play out Pamsaha. Envy, Shishupal. There's the kinship of the Vrishnis or the Yadavas. And then there's the affection of the Pandavas. And then finally, there's the devotional service of Narada. But it's not mentioned here. No. Gradually, they. The acharyas describe each one of them and show you why that may or may not be Ratnika or Ratnika. Prabhupada describes that the gopis may be considered to be examples of spontaneous love and sensual attraction. Superficially, it appears like sex. Prabhupada explains later that it's not. King Kamsa is attracted to Krishna by fear. Sisapal was also envious of Krishna. the descendants of King Yadu, due to their family relationship with Krishna, always thinking of him as one of their members. So all these different kinds of devotees have a spontaneous attraction to Krishna in different categories, and they see the same desired goal of life. So as we see probably in the workbook that there we have the gopis and the yadus, etc. That's spontaneous attraction with love. And it comes from Sisipal, there's a spontaneous attraction without love. That's the distinction. The Narada Muni's attachment is described, it's not counted as Ragatika Bhakti, it's actually described as in Vaidhi Bhakti, because it arises from a sense of duty. What's that? In the context of this verse, so you know, we discount Sisipal Kamsa because it's unfavourable. Although Narada Muni is favourable, it's still not within the category of Radha and Radha because there is a sense of duty there. The Pandavas may or may not be regarded as Raghatmika Bhakti, depending on whether or not it's mixed with awe and reverence. Prabhupada explains there that again, he analyzes the affection of the Yadus. If it is on the platform of friendship, then it is spontaneous love, but if it is on the platform of regular principles, then it is not. So, some of the Yadus and the Pandavas, when there's a mood of friendship, spontaneous love, then we consider it Raghatmika, and some of the others though are not there on the path of regular principles, so we're going to use it there. So therefore we've excluded fear, envy, respectful affection and obedient devotion. That leaves two, is the lusty desire, which is the Kama Rupa, the gopis, and the familiar relationship with Sambhani Rupa. So, as we said, it's a very important verse. You want to study the commentaries. It's a really nice verse. The main point is, somehow or another, fix your mind on Krishna. That is very purifying, and it will elevate you to the spiritual world. That's the main point. Rupa Goswami cites that because within it, the two prime categories of Raghatmika Bhakti are stated. Then there's the discussion, there's quite a lengthy discussion there that, again, sometimes in the scriptures it states that the potency of thinking of Krishna, that even demons comes from Sisipal, the same destination of liberation. Again, it has to be understood in the proper context. Example is given that they achieve an impersonal liberation, whereas the devotees achieve personal liberation by having a personal relationship with the Lord in the spiritual planets. ultimately that they've gone to the spiritual world, so we can say they've gone to the same place, but there's still a vast difference between the impersonal liberation of the demons.
Kingdom and palace.
What's that?
So for this example of kingdom and palace.
Yeah.
The impersonalist goes to palace. They are in kingdom, but still they are not in
palace. Kingdom and palace, yeah. Alright, so do we, anyone want to discuss that point?
Out of fear and envy, the spontaneous attraction for Krishna, that can exist only if the relationship is not favorable.
Say that again.
The spontaneous attraction for Krishna out of fear or envy. That exists only if it is unfavorable or in favorable mood that is possible.
For it to be considered spontaneous devotional service, it has to be favorable.
So the example given is just the spontaneous part, it's not devotion.
A spontaneous
attraction,
yeah. In one sense, this verse can be used in another way, which I have seen it used to describe the all-attractive nature of Krishna. That, you know, Krishna is so attractive that, you know, for those who want to hate an enemy, Krishna is the best. There's no one better to hate than Krishna. He's the most attractive enemy you could have. And that is very powerful. There's a good competition. You know, generally you don't see that a very powerful man, you know, they like to, you know, a very powerful ruler, they like to display their power and smash other powerful enemies. You know, they generally don't make, you know, the little two-year-old kid next door or something, blowing off their most vicious enemy, because there's no contest. I will throw all my chariots behind and then I will swing the next door and I will get that lollipop. The two-year-old. There's not much attractive within that, you know? An enemy, someone powerful, someone who's got something that you really want. All the things that I want, he's got it, I'm going to give it up. No, that's Krishna. So, you know, in one sense, because Krishna is all attractive, then, you know, there can be a spontaneous relationship with him in all different ways. That's there within that verse. Then, of course, there's a very important definition given, the difference between, you know, so we use the words the lusty desires of the gopis. So, it is, you know, described by Rupa Goswami that we're using this term because it sort of describes the intensity and the, you know, spontaneous nature of their meditation, the, you know, the strength of their meditation, the total absorption. You know, when you know, people think of the lusty desires like a very all-encompassing, you know, thing that takes over one's mind and senses, very spontaneously, automatically, very powerfully, very strong attraction. So all those things are invoked by using that term lusty. So therefore, that term is used to describe their relation, their mood of attraction to Krishna. But it's not lusty in the sense that the other sense of lust is that one wants to satisfy one's own senses, one's own self. That is not included, within this definition. Within this definition of lust or desire, it has all those qualities of attraction and spontaneity and magnetism. But with the desire to, the lust is to satisfy the senses of the Supreme Lord. So that distinction is made. Here, we see that you see Prabhupada in the next devotion, he says, if we're talking about an excessive desire to serve the Lord in a particular capacity, that's the way lusty desire is being used. But Prabhupada says, the lusty attitude of the gopis does not refer to any sort of sex indulgence. Sripa Goswami explains that lusty desire refers to the devotee's particular attitude of association with Krishna. Every devotee in his perfectional stage has a spontaneous attraction to the Lord. This attraction is sometimes called the lusty desire of the devotee. The lust is the devotee's excessive desire to serve the Lord in a particular capacity. Excessive desire. Such a desire may seem to be a desire for enjoying the Lord, but actually the endeavour is to serve the Lord in that capacity. For example, a devotee may be desiring to associate with the personality devotee as his cow or friend. He will want to serve the Lord by assisting him in controlling the cows in the pasturing ground. This may appear to be a desire to enjoy the company of the Lord, but actually a spontaneous love, serving him by assisting in managing the transcendental cows. So here, Srila Prabhupada uses the term lusty desire not in reference to the gopis, but in reference to all devotees, given the example of cow or sports. It is excessive desire to serve the Lord in a particular capacity. So that lusty desire is there within all devotees who have a relationship with the Lord, but it is particularly at its peak within the gopis. They're the best examples of it.
What's that? It's the same as saying the greedy.
Yeah, that's right, yes. The difficulty, of course, is that, again, because we know the gopis' love for Krishna does involve kissing, embracing, and cuddling, and all those sort of things, then hence the confusion comes in that, is given that material and spiritual lust are as different as iron and gold. Selfish desire is a motivation for material lust. Selfless desire is a motivation for spiritual lust. In the mundane world, every action is selfish. In the spiritual world, every action is selfless and is meant exclusively for the Lord's pleasure. Again, you see here that Srila Prabhupada, in that quote that I read previously, he describes how there is an apparent selfishness. That the devotee may be designed to associate with the personality of the devotee as his cowhead friend. It is here that he has a particular desire, a selfish desire, to enjoy the Lord in a particular way. The fact is that the devotee is actually desiring that because he wants to the Lord to enjoy through his service, you know, in that particular way. So, when a devotee has a particular desire to serve the Lord as a gopi and embrace the Lord and kiss the Lord, they're thinking that because that, you know, some that will give the Lord pleasure. It's selfless, they're not thinking in that way, I will become very happy. So many, many statements you see in the gopis and the various residents of Vrindavan can be taken as apparent selfishness. But you should always understand that they do. From the overall understanding their activities, overall, we can understand there's no selfishness at all. Throughout the pastimes of the Lord, and his associates, it's seen that they're all prepared to forego everything, including life itself, in order to somehow, for the pleasure of the Lord. There are never any activities where the residents of Vrindavan somehow impede on the Lord's pleasure for their own. And whenever they're asking, do something that appears like an ordinary selfish desire, it's because they know that the Lord is enjoying that particular mood that they're offering. Krishna enjoys the reciprocation from the gopis. Their attraction to him, selfishness, but Krishna, he also loves them. So he's thinking that, I don't want to be enjoying this situation. I want to, reciprocate with them in such a way that they are the enjoyers. So there's actually, this is the battle of love. It's different from the battle of love in the material world. The battle of love, of course, in the material world is a different battle altogether. Is to someone's enjoyment has been impinged upon, and so there's a struggle and there's a fight, verbally, physically, and through all sorts of different ways in order that one becomes predominant enjoyer in the situation. That's a battle of love. It's actually a battle of lust. Spiritual world, there is a mighty battle of love which is continuously raging. But that battle of love is about knowing who, intelligence. You know, if God is going out of his way to somehow make his beloveds relish unlimited bliss, then somehow in order to trick him so that he becomes the enjoyer of unlimited bliss, you know, there's a lot of, you know, planning and, you know, and there's a lot of backup and, you know, there's a, you know, a huge, you know, they're very expert, and because they're so expert, because you have to remember that these eternal methods of the spiritual world are in fact, you know, extension of Krishna's own potency. But ultimately, his pleasure potency wins, and therefore, the Lord, admitting defeat, takes, appears as Srimati Radharani in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he finds that her, you know, what she experiences in that love battle is beyond what he can. Measure of her love for him is beyond what he can fathom. So he takes her position in order to. So although he's been defeated in that battle of love by taking her position, and ultimately he becomes the victor as well. So he is both the victor and the victim in the battle of love. And in this way, he tastes all the varieties of love from all the positions that are possible. that is very much different from the battle of mastery material world as to, you know, who shall subjugate others for their own personal selfish desires. So, you know, throughout there are many wonderful pastimes that different devotees, Krishna Das Kaviraj, Krishna Chakravarti Thakur, Kavikana Purna, Bilba Mandala Thakur, you know, many of these different writers have written, you know, the different pastimes. Rupa Goswami, of course, the various Goswamis, Raghunath Das Goswami, they have written various pastimes. Revealing this great battle of love, pure devotional love, without any trace of selfishness. As you can imagine, because these are pastimes between the Supreme Lord and the expansion to his own pleasure potency, you know, they take very, very deep and. There's a lot of purification that one needs to undergo in order to be able to, you know, relish in parts of them. But generally, because people aren't on that platform, they associate these pastimes as something very similar to their own lust affairs in the material world and cannot taste any of it. In fact, those things are all discussed there. And of course, you know, we should understand that when personalities like Uddhava, who's Krishna's friend, is aspiring after following in the footsteps of the gopis, it's admiring their lusty relationship with Krishna, as his best friend, and certainly one of his dear most friends. It has nothing to do with material lust. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's the most perfect sannyasi, being the Supreme Lord, who's also aspiring to follow in the footsteps of the gopis. Again, it has nothing to do with mundane lust. The Goswamis have been down very, very strict. Very, very strict. All the acharyas, Goswamis, very, very strict devotees, not a trace of material attachment, material thought whatsoever, aspiring, for the service and the mood of these gopis. So it shows that it's transcendental affairs. It has nothing to do with mundane life. So that's another way we can understand that. Finally, just one last point is that Rupa Goswami mentions, in order to highlight the purity of the gopis' love, he mentions also the example of Kubja. She also had the conjugal attraction for Krishna, but it was not as pure as the love of the gopis, and there was a little bit of selfish desire that tinged her attraction. So she's not exactly Kama Rupa, she's called Kama Praya, which means almost lusty desire. It's almost on the level of the gopis, but not quite. It's a little tinge of selfish desire. Almost on the Kutu is ultimately an expansion of the sense of Balaram brotherhood. Also, it's an expansion of Bhul Chakra. It's Bhul Nima and three principal energies of the world. Bhul, Sri, Nima. She's described as an expansion. Bhukshatam also described as an expansion, past expansion of Satchidananda. Although she is displaying this category, you have to be careful not to accept her as a materially conditioned soul. It is like a leela. It is like a leela to display the slightly very category of conjugal love, which is again displayed in order to once again glorify the love of the gopis. But although she's displaying that leela with Krishna, at some stage I'm going to have to double up because I want to make sure that we have a good revision.